A state representative caught in a Craigslist scandal. Is his career doomed? The ads begin in the race for mayor of Indianapolis. Which candidate has the best message? Dick Lugar says the economy is strong. Critics say he's out of touch. That, plus Dan Burton takes on the public. The Franklin Township schools create a traffic jam and a collision of art and advertising at the airport on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 12, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, State Representative Phil Hinkle is caught in a scandal that reportedly began when he met a teenager on Craigslist and arranged a meeting in a downtown hotel. The Indianapolis Star is reporting that Hinkle, a Republican, took the young man to the JW Marriott after agreeing to pay for undisclosed services. The teenager got cold feet when he learned Hinkle is a lawmaker, but the story goes, Hinkle exposed himself and offered money and gifts if the young man would keep quiet. That young man is Cameron Gibson, who identifies himself as a Pike Township High School student on his Facebook page. The Star says he is 18 years old. He rejected a request for an interview. Hinkle is also declining interview requests. His attorney, Peter Nugent, says that he doesn't know what will happen next. House Speaker Brian Bosma says he plans to meet with Hinkle and chart a course of action. Can Phil Hinkle keep his seat in the legislature? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender, editor for the Franklin College Statehouse News Bureau, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, does Phil Hinkle have any options?
Well, it's kind of hard to see, very many options for him here. It's really a pretty sad story, all in all. I think he made a real effort to be a good legislator. I'm not sure why this is quite as newsworthy as it's been portrayed, and certainly having those salacious details in the newspaper I thought was inappropriate. But having said that, he could try to hold on to the seat. He certainly could, and if he goes out and apologizes and asks for forgiveness, voters have done other things like that. Who knows? There may be a future for him.
Would you recommend that?
No. I wouldn't recommend anything about this course of action.
There's no allegation of anything illegal here. But if you look to recent scandals in Washington, D.C., that was the case with people like Anthony Weiner as well. This is a case where someone who is a public figure who gets caught in behavior like this really has little choice but to give up his office, isn't it?
Well, I don't know what he's going to do. I agree with Ann on that. It's hard to tell what Phil Hinkle will do. I think it would be difficult not to do that, quite frankly. But I am so disappointed in this story, I can't begin to tell you. Disappointed and saddened because he was a good legislator and is a good legislator. So, a good family. I've known that family a long time, and I'm truly disappointed. But I don't know if he can survive this. He works for a school system. The mood of the public being what it is today, whether or not he can even think about trying to survive this is beyond question for me. I just don't see how he does it.
So, Leslie, answer the journalism question. Is this news?
I think it is news. I mean, I think that the public expects public officials to live up to some standards, and there may not be anything that can be charged legally. There may not be a definition of a crime here, but I think if all the facts as laid out are correct, it certainly implies that there could have been one, and I just don't think the public's going to react well to that.
Hinkle, here in the hours after this story broke, has said nothing. That doesn't serve him well, does it?
Well, I don't know exactly what you do say, though, Jim, other than yes or no, this is what happened, he's in a very difficult position. And I think that what Ann and Mike have said about, you know, strategy going forward, it's going to be very difficult for Representative Hinkle to maintain his seat. It is a story, because whether or not a law was broken, what's considered improper behavior has occurred. You know, he's married, he has a family, and if he was with this person, you know, that's morally improper. And I think that that's what makes it a story, because he's held to a, you know, as a public official.
And I think it isn't just about that behavior, but it's also about the sort of attempts to cover up the situation or keep it from becoming public that, once again, it may not be illegal, but certainly wouldn't sit well with most people.
I don't argue that it's a story, and I don't argue that it needs to be covered. What I was arguing about is the prominence of that coverage on the front page and also the details that were put in there that I don't think are appropriate. I don't think they're appropriate I think it's just too salacious. I think they could have made the story, they could have made the points without putting the gory details in there and the embarrassment that results to
right.
for his
I'm
family.
Sure it was a very difficult discussion that went on in the Indianapolis Star newsroom about exactly what to report and what not to.
Well, it sounds like they decided to just put it all out there, so I don't think it could have been that difficult for them.
Does it matter that he's a Republican?
No, I don't think it matters that he's a Republican at all. I think it's just... It may make it a little bit more difficult with him in his own caucus. I don't think that the coverage, in fact, you'd assume the opposite kind of coverage from the Indianapolis Star because it was a Republican. So I don't think it's Republican label that's the problem. But I think when you've got the Defense of Marriage Act being one of the prime agendas for the Republican Party, I think that makes his tenure in his caucus more difficult. Yeah.
Do you agree?
We've had this kind of thing happen. People of both political parties, I don't think political party has anything to do with it. But the sheer recklessness of it in this day and age where we've seen so many examples of this kind of thing and what it can do to destroy lives and families is truly a sad, sad situation.
Moving on. The air war began in the race for mayor of Indianapolis this week with Melina Kennedy first on the air.
Democrat Melina Kennedy's first ad focuses on education, an issue the mayor has little control over, but one that voters care about.
On schools, a can-do leader who believes failure is never an option. Melina Kennedy.
The ads hit the air well in advance of the campaign's Labor Day target. It's a sign of successful fundraising.
For me, it's about making sure as soon as possible we can connect with voters, let them know what it is Melina Kennedy brings to the table if she's elected mayor.
Mayor Greg Ballard's campaign acted quickly to reduce any head start Kennedy might create. At a budget briefing, he spelled out the message behind his first ad.
I'm running right to my record. I think it's a good record. I think people are very happy with what's been going on in the city. It's very stable, it's very consistent, while still moving forward.
We've made a lot of progress, but we're not done yet. But we are well on our way.
Mike McDaniel, which candidate has the best opening ad?
I thought the Ballard ad was very strong. I saw it today for the first time. I only saw it once. I only saw her spot this morning also for the first time. I was stunned by her ad because... it looked like she was running for superintendent of public construction. The things she talked about in the ad are not things that the mayor can do anything about. The part of education that the mayor can do something about, charter schools, she didn't even mention that because she's already on record as saying he's done a good job with charter schools. So, and I wonder if that's not included because obviously the teachers unions don't like charter schools and you don't want to run an ad where you're sticking a finger in their eye at this point in the process. But the fact that they're both on this early,
mid-August,
I think is important, and I think they will both be on the rest of the campaign, which means that this is going to be a very hard-fought, competitive race all the way down to the wire.
Yeah, I've been saying all along this will be the best mayor's race we've seen since Steve Goldsmith versus Louis Mayhern. He's got a pretty good-looking ad.
Yeah, he does have
a good ad. He has a good ad, and so does she. And she's talking about something, despite what Mike says, that's very important to the voters of Indianapolis, and that is education. And the mayor has a bully pulpit, okay? And Mayor Ballard was AWOL when the discussion was going on in the legislature to cut the funding of all Marion County schools. He had nothing to say in opposition to that. He had nothing to say in opposition to the vouchers. And everybody knows there's a strong connection between crime and between economic development and education. And if he wants to lead the city, he has to be a voice in favor of education. And as I said, he's been AWOL.
You know what, though, John? I was impressed that Melina Kennedy didn't do more of an autobiographical spot to begin. She went straight, I mean, the opening shows a photo of her in college, and then she goes straight to an issue.
Well, and that is typically for a candidate new to the race, you would expect that. Now, she's not exactly an unknown quantity, having run for prosecutor, and I think that there's a fair amount of awareness about folks. But, you know, Mike is right. The mayor can't do a lot about education directly. But Anna's right, too. There is a bully pulpit, and it's well-timed. Back to school, people are thinking about education right now. So I think that she does a nice job of capturing that. That said, I think Mayor Ballard's opening salvo is good, too. Well-produced, to-the-point ads, and it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds.
I thought it was interesting what Mayor Ballard said about his ad, which is he feels like people feel pretty good about Indianapolis right now. And as I think we've all talked about before, that's what this race really comes down to. You can advertise from now until Election Day, but it really comes down to, do people feel good or bad about their neighborhood? And so it'll be interesting to find out whether he's right and whether people feel good.
The Kennedy campaign's been saying all along that their target date for starting ads was Labor Day. They beat that by better than 2 weeks here, 3 weeks. Says she's having fundraising success.
Yeah, they're raising money. I mean, they got to take their shot at this election. And so they're going to pull out all the stops. But the interesting thing about that is you go back 4 years ago, when Greg Ballard was struggling trying to raise money to even get on TV,
right.
Well, now he has the ability to answer this on the same day, basically, and be on the air probably the rest of the campaign. But he's in a lot better situation now than he was
four years ago.
By 1,000%.
Oh, sure.
But people see him as steady, as honest, and that's going to serve him well in this campaign.
The interesting thing about this is that he's responding to Melina Kennedy, too. I mean, he's not so confident in his abilities there and his record and his personality that he's letting her go on the air first. He immediately jumped the gun as well. Well, maybe, but that nonetheless, she's not the incumbent.
If they're both on, it's not like somebody's got an advantage for weeks where nobody's on the air like we've seen in other campaigns.
Well, her buy is substantially higher, and I think education is going to feature in this campaign.
I think it'll be a loser for her.
Oh, we'll see.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, do you pay attention to political ads? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, only the negative ones. Last week's question was, does a state tax cut make sense? 27% said, yes, we have too much government. 36% said, no, extra money should go to the schools. 37% said a tax hike makes more sense. I don't know what that says about the audience. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to WFII.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Indiana Senator Richard Lugar is under fire for declaring that the economy is strong despite the turmoil on Wall Street this week. Lugar is answering critics who say he is out of touch with common Hoosiers. The Republican says that he voted for the debt deal to save the country and that we should be facing bigger problems than falling stock prices without it. We would be, he says. Somebody needs to give consumers hope.
I was surprised, however, that Democrat and Republican critics were very unhappy that anybody was pointing out about the strength of America. What people understand is things are very bad. One poll after another condemns the system, the politicians, the whole lot. What is missing is the leadership element.
And he's criticizing the president for our lack of leadership. John Ketzenberger, is Lugar susceptible to a charge that he is out of touch?
No, I really don't think so, because there is evidence that there is some underlying, not strength, but stabilization in the economy. We're starting to see a few of those things now. The problem is they're drowned out because of, one, everybody looks at the stock markets and they see the up and down ride that we've had the last week. And there's just a lot of fear and otherwise angry emotion in the economy and worry about it, and understandably. So all of that said, it's easy to say, yeah, he looks like he's out of touch. The truth is there are some encouraging signs, and unemployment has come down a little bit. There's stabilization in interest rates and certainty about that going forward. There are some things that are picking up in the economy. So he's right. And he's also right about confidence and leadership, and that's really where you pull yourself out of this.
I think John's right that he probably is right about those things, but I don't think that doesn't mean he's not susceptible to that argument. I mean, I think that is exactly point. What the Murdoch folks are trying to do.
Well, it's not just the Murdoch folks. The Democrats put out a web video this week comparing what he said to something that John McCain said in the 2008 campaign.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the problems that Dick Lugar has is he has been in Washington so long that he is susceptible to that kind of argument. Anyone who's been in Washington for a long time is going to be susceptible to that argument, even if they may be getting it right.
Right. Good point.
Should Lugar be worried about how everything he says is being dissected?
Well, there's no question that everything he says is going to be taken and twisted whatever way the opponents want to twist it. In this particular case, as an example of that, he was talking about American exceptionalism, talking about leadership of this economy and the world as it relates to other economies around the world. And clearly we are. People still rely on the American dollar. 62% of the world reserves are based on the U.S. dollar. And so he's right about all that. But the problem is, when Dick Lugar talks in those kind of global concepts, the guy who is out of work and has been for 99 weeks looks at that and says, you know, what's he talking about? He's right. He's absolutely right. But they're going to take everything he says like that and twist it to their advantage, and that's what's going on here. And the fact that the Democrats put out something about it, when Dick Durbin of Illinois said the exact same thing that Dick Lugar said about the U.S. economy.
And Joe Donnelly voted for the debt deal.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the hypocrisy of that's just more than I can take.
But
Lugar really gets it. I mean, he knows what's going on, and he's right. We need leadership right now.
But what the Democrats are doing is interesting because clearly they – Joe Donnelly is running for the Senate as a Democrat, and the Democrats would like to have him go up against Richard Murdoch rather than Richard Lugar, and they're going to do everything they can to help Richard Murdoch, is the indication, correct?
So what's the question? One thing I'd point out with this, though, is that Murdoch ought to be careful about using this because you had all the volatility on Wall Street, all a function, Standard & Poor's tells us, of the downgrade in the American system by Standard & Poor's, downgraded because of the Tea Party rhetoric saying that they would permit the government to default on its obligations. So he's right in bed with the Tea Party. They're the ones that cause it, and then they want to blame Lugar for being out of touch. Doesn't make an awful lot of sense.
All right, worries about jobs in the economy led to an overflow crowd at a town hall meeting held this week by Congressman Dan Burton. The Republican held two town hall meetings in Carmel to accommodate the crowd. Both meetings were packed. Burton is one of a handful of Republicans who voted against the debt ceiling legislation, saying it didn't go far enough.
The most productive economy we've ever had was under Democratic leadership.
This next election is probably the most important election of their lifetime, and they should be involved and pay attention to what's going on.
Leslie Weidenbender, will this August recess produce the kind of voter unrest that we saw last year when everybody was talking about the health care?
I don't think it's nearly to the level it was. I do think there is a broader group of people, actually, that are frustrated right now. But I don't think it's going to cause the same sorts of issues at congressional meetings that we saw some congressmen wouldn't hold town hall meetings because they didn't want to have to deal with it.
They were afraid of the anger.
Well, the stakes are higher then, too, because the election was right around the corner, and now you don't have an election for more than a year. So, you know, it's understandable that you won't have the same kind of fervor, but I think there is an awful lot of anger out there. And, you know, the kind of back and forth that we saw in the last question that you've got only foments that anger, and it doesn't make it any better.
He voted against the deal because he said it didn't go far enough, and he's got rooms full of people saying you need to do more.
At the same time, you leave my Social Security and my Medicare alone. Okay, what's wrong with that picture? I mean, the whole message of this entire debt crisis caused, I might add, by George Bush is the fact it happens to be the truth that you exploded the deficit with your president. But he didn't. He inherited a course to return.
7.2%.
He inherited.
Let's go back to the point at hand.
The point at hand is Bush caused this crisis, and on top of that, what you've got is the only way you're going to deal with it is by cuts and with tax increases. and with tax increases and some eligibility sacrifices made. You can't say, you can't touch my programs, right. Go out and cut everything else and make it work.
Is this unhappiness with Congress or unhappiness with Burton or a combination?
It's unhappiness with Congress generally and the federal government generally and the Obama administration in particular. You know, this idea that they inherited all these provinces is when you inherit a 7.8% unemployment, it's now 9.2%, and you're in the third year of your presidency, you can't keep getting away with that argument.
Uh-huh.
And so he's run out of time on that. But this is anger. This is genuine anger out there about a lot of different things about the federal government spending. And I think Burton was smart to have this in the southern part of this new district to do these two meetings. I was stunned at the size.
Because he's got to win more voters there than he did last time.
That's
if he's
where
he not
did do well last time.
That may
time.
Be okay for him. But the anger that I see in the country isn't related necessarily to the spending. It's related to the unemployment and the uncertainty of the future. And those are at a collision course,
the
by the way.
The spending is the biggest problem right now.
Well, that's your opinion because you have a job.
Moving on. New school bus fees in the Franklin Township Public Schools led to huge traffic jams this week. 8,000 of the 9,000 kids would ride the bus last year. This year, just 1,600 are riding instead of paying $47.50 a month. Parents are opting to drive their kids. Now they're just sitting in gridlock for as long as 2.5 hours. Here's Superintendent Walter Burke.
The only lesson I've learned is how much I hate not being able to offer transportation to our families and students. This is a horrible situation for any school district to be in, but when you lose $16.6 million to property tax caps, this is what happens.
Mike McDaniel, is it the property tax caps? Is this something we're going to see in other districts, or is this specific to Franklin Township?
I think this is a school board that's run amok. They did not like the idea that they lost the referendum, which would have given them more money. And to show their anger on that, they've decided to charge people to bus their kids to school. And if you're in a family with four or five kids, and it's, what, $47 a piece or something like that, that gets to be a lot of money. So I think this is a situation that's kind of more at Franklin Township's doorstep than at most other places around Indiana. But it's tragic. It shouldn't be this way.
I'm pretty sure that if they'd made it clear this would be the result of a failed referendum, they would have gotten more votes.
They might have. But the fact of the matter is that they're put in this bind by the property tax cap. And we said all along that these were the kinds of things that were going to happen. Extracurricular activities either cut or charged for. All these different things were going to come
from it. You're laying this at the doorstep of Governor Daniels.
I absolutely am. And it was predictable. It was predictable from the beginning. You not only have the property tax caps on the budget and the transportation and all, but you have cuts. You have cuts going on in the millions of dollars to these school systems. They can't make money. The tree doesn't grow that fast.
Have you
so
seen
it's the governor's
the facilities
fault.
That they built up there, the football stadium?
That's fine. They're built, though.
There has been.
Now, how do you heat them? You know, how do you put the lights on? What do you do?
They can make that happen out there.
John,
they just don't manage it.
Has there been mismanagement in the Franklin Township School District?
Well, there have been a lot of choices that were made. You know, they decided to build these facilities. They decided to do those things. And then the rules all changed on them. So I don't think it's mismanagement per se. You know, they were operating under a different set of assumptions and rules, and just as they get those things built, the rules change. Now they've incurred the wrath of people who didn't like the fact that they built some of these facilities at the same time that their capacity to raise income is severely hampered. It was a no-win situation for them, and I will say it's not limited to Franklin Township. They made these choices. Others made other choices. We're going to see this across the state.
Should parents there be upset?
Of course they should be upset, but what they have to think about, what we all have to think about, is that there are choices that we all make about how much we want to pay in taxes, what services we want, and these are the kinds of things that happen when people choose to have lower property taxes or lower income taxes or whatever.
Finally, art and advertising clashed at the Indianapolis International Airport this week. Artist James Willie Faust says his piece named Chrysalis is being removed to make way for digital monitors that will display, among other things, advertising. He's upset. Airport officials say the sculptural painting that includes 14 separate canvases, 10 aluminum pieces, and 6 sandblasted glass panels is in too good a spot to devote solely to art. By the end of August, it will be in storage Ann Delaney is the Grinch in charge of the Indianapolis airport.
I'm not sure. It's obvious he is. I mean, I don't know how you could even debate that. I mean, you take something down that's that attractive and you put up another ad so that you can be bombarded as you go down to get your bags. Yeah, sure.
But public entities need money, right?
This is about that. This is about saving people money and trying to have enough operating money to make this thing work so you don't have to charge people that travel through that facility.
Should there be a better happy medium?
Well, they're talking about finding another spot for the artwork, but the artist isn't happy with that. But they're going to work this out, and everybody will have more money, and they won't have to charge the travelers.
I think if the Super Bowl weren't happening next January, this wouldn't be an issue right now.
Welcome, Super Bowl.
There you go.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of Franklin College, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/podcast, wfyi.org/podcast. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.